You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.
Right, welcome back. And I had the utter pleasure to be able to speak to Fabiana Palladino the other day, who is playing in Barcelona later this month. In fact, on the 21st of October, Razzmatazz 3. Before that, the Saturday 19th of October, she is at Sala Clamores in Madrid. Before that, in A Coruña, actually. Very nice. Sergi's laughing at me. Right.
I'm laughing at Johan.
No laughing matter, or maybe there is. Anyway, so she connected from her bedroom, I presume, in London. I hope you enjoy the interview. Sergi and I are going to go and see her live. Johan isn't, yeah. So, you know...
Don't say that. She might be listening.
It's because he has young children. I'm just saying, so that's 2 out of 3 is not bad. When was the last time all 3 of us went to something?
Very good.
Thank you.
As Ben described her earlier today, la reina del sol, Fabiana Palladino.
Yeah, I'm in London. I'm just at home. Yeah, I'm at home at the minute. I've sort of was away quite a bit over the summer, and then I've just had a few weeks at home, which has been really nice. And then going back out sort of for the next couple of months as well.
Was it touring this summer?
Yeah, it was kind of just festivals and other kind of bits and bobs. No kind of full tours, but shows, mainly shows. Yeah, kind of my first festival season, really.
I saw you played with SZA, right?
Well, yeah, I was on the very long lineup of support artists, which was amazing. That I got to be on that lineup. So it was great. It was Sampha, Snow Allegra, like some really brilliant other artists. But it was one of those like Hyde Park calling things, which was super cool. And she's amazing, obviously. So I was really happy to be doing that.
Yeah, that seems like amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, the show was incredible. And it was like the night before, because she did obviously headline Glastonbury, it was like the night before the Glastonbury show. So I sort of felt like I was getting to see, you know, the thing that everyone was super hyped about before it was even on.
I wanted to go back a bit, if you don't mind, because your excellent eponymous debut album came out this year. I knew you'd been around for a while, but I was actually seeing your first records came out in 2011. I was wondering why you took so many years to do it. Was that a conscious decision, or is it just sort of the way you are?
It wasn't a conscious decision, no. It was kind of just circumstances, really. And I was very much figuring out, you know, who I was as an artist and what I wanted to do and how to actually sort of make it work in like practical terms and all of that sort of stuff, and life was just sort of getting in the way and, you know, boring kind of logistical stuff got in the way quite a lot for me, because I was sort of, you know, making my living from playing for other artists, and, you know, and I was really happy and lucky to be able to get to do that, but these jobs would come in, and, you know, when you're a session musician and you're playing for, you know, an act that's doing like a big album campaign, that takes you away for like a year and a half or 2 years even. So that just kept happening. That happened a bunch of times, and before I knew it was like, you know, years and years had gone past. So not intentional, but I am happy that it kind of worked out that way, because I felt like I really had time to like really get this first record right, or at least the way I wanted it to be.
And was there a time when it just came, you had to say, no, I'm not, you know, I'm not doing any other work, I've got to go and work on this?
Yeah, there really was. And it was a really tough decision to make, because I was getting offers the best work, or you know, amazing work, basically, with, you know, there was two artists that I potentially could have sort of joined their tours, and they were brilliant artists. And I just had to go this is this either now or never a little bit. I've kind of felt like that at the time, at least. And it worked out for the best, because then kind of COVID kind of happened to happen at that time. So those tours didn't even happen. It was kind of good timing in a way. But I had to make the decision and go, right, no more. And it was tricky because that was how I made my living. So it was kind of, there was a difficult period of like not making any money and all that sort of boring stuff. But it was definitely the right thing to do in the end.
I've often got this sort of vision that like being a touring musician in somebody else's band must be one of the nicest ways to earn a living, you know, because you get to play in front of thousands of screaming people, but you go on the street afterwards and have a walk around if you like. And
totally, yeah, completely. You get a lot of the fun parts of it without the pressure of being the response, you know, the focus and the one who really has all the responsibility. So yeah, it was amazing, you know, sort of 10 years of doing that. And I do miss it sometimes, having that getting to do all the fun stuff without the stress. But I'm happy with how it's going now.
I mean, talking about your debut album, it's got your name on it. I mean, sorry, obviously it's got your name on it, but it also it's eponymous, and it's got a picture of you, a very stylized picture of you on the front. And I think I was reading somewhere that it's like a persona in a way. It is you, but it's not you. Is that right?
Yeah, totally. It's definitely like it's me, but it's like the most, well, maybe not the most at the time, it felt like the most enhanced or the most like an enhanced side of one part of my personality, essentially, which is the one that wants to kind of, you know, be out there and be a performer and be an artist. And I felt like I had to sort of go into that side of myself, that persona, in order to do any of this, because it's not something that ever really came supernaturally to me. I was never like that person that wants to be the center of attention or anything like that. I think I've learned that that doesn't mean you're not an artist, essentially. I just had to put myself kind of front and center, which was scary. It kind of made sense for the music, and it made sense for, you know, helping me just sort of push myself forward or push myself into doing it. It's kind of like, I'm quite like, you know, black and white. And it's like, either I'm going to go really hard with this and I'm going to put my face like massive on the cover, or I'm just not going to do it at all.
One of the things I was thinking about the album taking quite a long time to come together is it feels to me like an album that's kind of out on its own, if you see what I mean. It does sound very 2024, but I can't really think of many things to compare it to.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I think that is fair. And, you know, a few people have said that, and I do feel like that. And sometimes it's kind of difficult in a way, because it's, you know, it's like, for it to be like palatable for people, for them to have an understanding of, it's great to have these sort of like, you know, these journalistic like sound bites, like, oh, she's like so and so crosses so and so, and there's been a bit of that, and I always like quite enjoy those comparisons, but I don't think it's that easy to describe my music, actually, and there isn't so much I don't know, there's not other music being made that sounds super similar that you can just kind of slot it into. There's a community of people that it is part of that helps with context. But musically, I think it can be a little bit hard to pin down. And it's pretty eclectic as an album, you know, it's musically, there's quite a lot of different stuff going on. So it's not just like one genre, you know.
Well, the two names that are often mentioned, and I don't know, I mean, they're great names, but maybe you're sick of hearing it, Janet Jackson and Prince.
Can't complain.
No, exactly. But that's the funny thing, is it kind of does feel a bit like them, but not retro. Like, how on earth do you do that?
I appreciate you saying that, because that was definitely the hardest part of making the record, is, you know, I'm someone that is able to kind of imitate, or I try not to directly imitate, but, you know, to a certain extent, I'm inspired and influenced by that music. And it's not hard for me to create that, to make music that sounds a little bit like that. But what you're hearing is like a very refined version of that, where I have to really pull certain things back and make it less retro, less 80s, whatever you want to call it, and make it feel current and modern without losing the kind of, you know, the like spirit of those influences. So yeah, that was the trickiest part of making the album, was the kind of production and getting that right. And that just took a lot of time and a lot of, you know, help from other people. That was something that I worked with Jay Paul a lot, and that he definitely, you know, his production style definitely helped with that. But it was just, it just had to be like a very intentional thing, and it was hard sometimes to just cut out certain songs or cut out key sounds that were just too referential, essentially.
And do you find, like, when you, when you've been playing live and on bill, like, you know, festival bills, that kind of thing, do you find like you feel very at home with some artists, or do you find you're a bit like, well, I kind of fit in with this, but I kind of don't?
Probably the second one, if I'm honest. Yeah, there's a, I guess there's certain artists, you know, because I've been around for a while, and you know, I know a lot of the people that I played alongside, and so someone like Sampha, you know, I've known for a long time, and even though our music isn't really, there's certain things that are linked, but you know, I don't think our music sounds the same, but he's part of my like extended community, or you know, someone like Nila Fayanya, we played at festival together, and my drummer plays with her, and I've supported her years ago, and you know, there's this whole London community that I'm definitely, that I enjoy being a part of. But yeah, like you say, musically maybe it doesn't link as much as some artists do to each other.
As someone with two children, I'm kind of fascinated by the way you work with your family.
Mm.
Obviously, very musical family, and various family members appear on the album. Mm. Was that a case of convenience, they're there, or was it like, no, I actually definitely want to get you in here because I like the way you play whatever, or I like the way you sound?
It's definitely, yeah, that I want them on it, and I want their sound. But it's also maybe not so much convenience, but like it just feels natural and comfortable and reassuring for me to involve them. And I've always really, I only like to work with people that I have some sort of personal connection with, friendship or family, you know, not just family members, but I have to have a certain level of friendship. I've never been one to go into a room and just coldly, like, you know, just make a song or anything like that. It's never quite worked for me. So, you know, to have my family involved is just the most sort of, it's like the safest space for me. And it also just seems silly not to, like, you know, especially with my dad, you know, who's just such an amazing musician, and he elevates anything that he plays on, and to not do it would just feel a bit silly, really. They'd be like, why wouldn't you, you know?
Well, I was going to ask, like, what's the kind of dynamic like? Obviously, it's your music, mm. but every family has its internal dynamics. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you able to go, look, Dad, shut up, I don't want that bass line, it's my record?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I didn't really have to be honest, I didn't have to, but I know that I could if I, you know, it's a very, he's very, very open and just supportive of me and kind of get, you know, doesn't, I don't feel like a kid, you know, when we're working together. That's not the dynamic. It's like I'm very much an adult that's sort of, you know, created the basis for all of this. And he, you know, wants to, I think because he's so professional, he just wants to do what's best for the song. So, you know, aside from the relationship, that's just how it is when he works with anyone. So it just happens to, it always works, really, which is great. Very easy.
I'm fascinated. Was there ever a moment when you were like, no, I'm not going to go into music, I'm going to become an accountant?
Not an accountant, because I'm not so good with figures. I thought of doing other things, and I, you know, I went to uni originally to do English. It didn't work out because I just sort of quickly realised it wasn't for me. But it was more that I didn't really know what I wanted to do until I kind of fell into play. You know, I always made music or played music, but I never saw a very clear career path for me, because even though, you know, I had seen my dad and knew my mum had made, you know, worked as musicians over the years, I didn't see myself being like them or playing for other people, you know, that sort of thing. I was more of just like wanted to write songs or sing, or and I don't know, I just couldn't quite see it for myself. So yeah, it wasn't always like the actually an obvious career path for me, and it took a while to figure out, you know, like I said, that I did want to be an artist and I did want to do that, and I sort of got there via playing for other people.
You, among the various instruments you play, you're a drummer, right?
I do play drums, yeah. Not so much anymore, but yeah, I do.
Can I be excused some drummer chat? Like, who's your favourite drummer? Or some of them?
Oh my God. I love Steve Gadd. Big Steve Gadd fan. I have to say, I love Steve Ferroni, who played on one of my songs on the album, Stay With Me Through the Night, and I love the playing he did on the Chaka Khan album called What You Gonna Do For Me. And he, you know, he's played for tons of people, Tom Petty and all sorts. Who else? I love Manu Katché, French drummer who played with Sting. I mean, it's funny for me because I do sort of, because my dad's a bass player, and obviously the connection obviously you make as a bass player is often with the drummer, you know, you're a team. So a lot of these people have grown up, you know, hearing about and knowing. But I also have my own sort of relationship with their playing, where I've, you know, sort of had heard about Steve Gadd, but then heard, you know, Paul Simon and was like, oh, that's that guy that I've heard about, you know. Yeah, those are a few of the, yeah, the two Steve Gadd and Steve Ferroni. I love all the Motown drumming. I don't totally know who those drums were, but I love that style. Loads of different people.
Well, talking of your own music, Can You Look in the Mirror has an excellent beat.
Thank you.
And how did you get it to sound so sharp?
Sharp, I mean, I have to say that a lot of the drum programming on the record, for the most part, is Jay Paul, and he's really, you know, he's good at a lot of the production, but he's particularly, I would say, a brilliant drum programmer and takes it very, very seriously and spends a lot of time picking the exact right, you know, sound and tweaking everything. And but I was kind of really into this producer, Rich Harrison, who made a lot of R&B records in the 90s and noughties. And I was kind of trying to emulate that sound, and then I kind of wasn't quite getting it, and I had to sort of bring Jay in, and I think I played him like one song, which is a Tony Braxton song called Take This Ring. I was just like, I want it to sound like that, but I don't know how to do that. And then he kind of did that. And I think that's just the sharpness is just a case of just the picking the right sounds and the processing that he did to that.
What's Jay Paul like as a boss? And he's technically his label, he's your boss.
I don't know if I see him as my boss. I'm sure he, I don't know if he liked it. Would he like to be the thought of his boss? He probably would. No,
I'm certainly tongue in cheek, but I mean, I guess being on his label, like,
yeah, he's pretty low key, he's pretty casual with it. He, you know, he's not exactly sort of ordering people around that, but I think, you know, he has very specific opinions on things, and he's, you know, always very direct. And I, that's another thing that, you know, working with someone that I'm friends with and have been friends with for so long, you know, I really do trust his opinion, and I know he'll always be pretty like direct and straight up about things, musical things. The rest of the side of it, the kind of artwork and the visuals and stuff like that, he's, I would say, you know, was not directly involved with, but definitely had an opinion, and you know, it was great to sort of have, because he's, you know, a visual artist as well, does all the Paul Institute kind of graphics and stuff like that. So his opinion on that is kind of really valuable as well, and getting that right. And it's the same, it's almost the same approach as making the music feel modern, even though there's these, you know, old school references. It's like with the visuals, yeah, it's definitely has like an 80s feel to it, but it also feels, I think, modern. So it's, yeah, that is something that he's got involved with, and that was really valuable, yeah.
I was wondering actually if he'd given you any tips about taking the album live, because I always wondered how his music would translate live. I saw him this year, I think it was, and it was amazing gig. Like, it was some of this very intimate music, like, done really big. And I was wondering, like, you know, your album has a similar sort of intimacy. I was wondering if you'd taken any tips there.
Yeah, well, I was in his band. I don't know if you know that, but I was, yeah. I mean, it was very dark on stage, so don't blame me for not knowing.
I was very far away, very far.
Yeah, so I was involved with the whole process of that. And yeah, I did. I definitely, well, his musical director, Avi Barath, is brilliant and, you know, did an amazing job of taking that music and making it work for life. And that was like a case of kind of, I don't know, picking certain elements and losing certain things, but, you know, and then, but giving all of us as musicians space to like play and it, for it not to feel like we're just playing on some sort of backing track of J. Paul music, you know. But yeah, no, definitely being part of that as, you know, doing it from the start of the Coachella and all that sort of stuff definitely, yeah, has helped me kind of figure out how I would do my live thing as well.
Because you're on keyboards in that.
Yeah, keyboards, exactly. Yeah. And my brother's actually in the band as well. And obviously Jay's brother, so there's like two sets of siblings, which is pretty unusual.
I'm an Oasis.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that you have to kind of be in a room with people to work. Have you ever tried like email collaborations?
I've done a little bit of it with, you know, one or two people, you know, quite a while back, and you know, it can work for sure, you know, if the, for whatever reason, things kind of fall into place. But I don't know, there's just something that happens when you kind of get to know someone and you really spend a decent amount of time and there's less pressure because you know you have this time together, that I feel like it kind of flows better for me personally. I feel like it's a bit detached when it's via email or whatever. It's just a bit odd. It's just not a natural way to work.
You mentioned earlier that you have to kind of be in a room with people to work. Have you ever tried like email collaborations?
I've done a little bit of it with, you know, one or two people, you know, quite a while back, and you know, it can work for sure, you know, if the, for whatever reason, things kind of fall into place. But I don't know, there's just something that happens when you kind of get to know someone and you really spend a decent amount of time and there's less pressure because you know you have this time together, that I feel like it kind of flows better for me personally. I feel like it's a bit detached when it's via email or whatever. It's just a bit odd. It's just not a natural way to work.
So what was I going to ask? Oh, yeah, I mentioned your sort of debut single being in 2011. Mm. There was like a Long Nights of War EP.
Yeah.
Then there was For You, which I think was 2014.
Mm.
Not available to listen to as far as I can see. How do you feel about it? I mean, like, you know, if kind of fans of yours, I'm sure people can find them.
I think they can find For You, and I, you know, and I do sometimes feel like taking For You down was a bit of a mistake, actually. But it just felt like the right thing to do at a time. I'd sort of moved on quite a bit from the music I made at that time. I see that as my first single, actually. Even though I put out that EP, you know, I was really young, and it was just like a self-release. And I haven't heard that music in so long. I'd probably die. I'd die if I had to listen to it. I feel like I was a child. I wasn't, but I feel like I was. So I hope people don't hear that, but they could. And I shouldn't be embarrassed of it, because it is part of, you know, my journey or whatever. But For You, you know, I am proud of that song, and I made that with Sampha, you know, that was, he kind of co-produced that, and I think it was more the timing of it and everything wasn't quite right. And then when I started releasing music with Paul Institute, that kind of felt like a new beginning. And
could you recommend us some music?
Gosh, anything new, old?
Yeah, something new, why not? Something you're kind of... That's a horrendous question. As soon as I...
Let me just quickly look in my playlist I have, because I'm so bad at remembering. There's an artist I love called Eve Jarvis, who's from Montreal, and he's put out a bunch of records, I think, and then he put out these three songs last year that I was absolutely obsessed with. They've now disappeared, talking of like people taking the music down. I think probably because he's going to release them on in a different way, maybe like on an album or something. But yeah, I would recommend that, but people can't really listen to any of it, which is annoying. I'm quickly looking this playlist. I mean, I've been listening for the first time to a lot of Brazilian kind of, I guess, pop music. It's not new, but, you know, stuff like Gilberto Gil.
I think it's Gilberto, but I wouldn't swear to it.
I'm not too sure. And Javan, he made a song with Stevie Wonder, or like a bunch of music with Stevie Wonder, maybe. And then like Milton Nascimento. Yeah, I just went on a bit of a deep dive, not even a deep dive, but I just ended up on a thread of that. That's probably the most interesting thing. I'm quite behind the times sometimes. Like, I've only just listened to Dijon recently for the first time, who's like, obviously everyone's like loves and like has been around for a few years. But that album that he put out, I think it was in 2021, I only just heard it and I really loved that. You know, everyone's also obsessed with McGee, who I really love. You know, I've been listening to his album a lot. There's a bunch of stuff I need to listen to. I need to listen to Nilda Fianu's new record, because, yeah, I know few people that are involved in that, and I love her. So, yeah, a bunch of stuff like that, really quite eclectic. Yeah,
it is a great record, the new Nilda.
Is it? Great. Good to know. Yeah.
I wanted to finish, if I may, with just some sort of kind of quick fire questions about like music consumption. First record you bought?
I think it might, I'm not too sure. It would either be Alicia Keys' first, what's it called? Songs in A Minor. Or it might have been Norah Jones' Come Away With Me. One of those two. I believe was the one I bought with my own money, but there was probably a few very sort of tacky, embarrassing, like Peter Andre type situations before that.
You've got to embrace them. And the last one you bought, or I don't know, maybe last song you put on a playlist. I don't know if you buy.
I don't buy. Well, I do. I occasionally will buy vinyl if it's like. Well, anyone, but particularly if it's like a friend that's put out an album. Actually, the last song I added into a playlist was by Phineas, as in Billie Eilish's brother.
Yeah.
Shouldn't describe him as that. He's his own artist. But it's off his new album, For Crying Out Loud. It's the song. I think it's really, really great. I hadn't really listened to any of his actual music, and it just came up on an algorithmic playlist, and I thought it was brilliant.
And I haven't heard any of his solo music either.
It's a really great song. It's just like wicked pop songwriting. But I also like really like productions, kind of live band sounding thing.
It's the last day on Earth. What do you eat and what do you listen to?
I probably listen to just like one of my favourites, like Talking Book with Stevie Wonder, or like Aretha Franklin, or like all that music that's like the most sort of closest to my heart, the kind of stuff I grew up, you know, obsessing, or D'Angelo Voodoo, something like that, like something that's just like that I know inside out. Eating, what would I eat? I don't know. I mean, I'd like to say something like really, you know, like nostalgic, but it'd probably be like McDonald's or something. Or like, I don't know, not McDonald's, maybe like fish and chips.
Yeah.
Something British, you know, homely.
I don't think you can choose voodoo, can you, given that your dad was on it? No.
I know, it's a weird one, but it transcends that for me. Even though he's on it, I just like, it's so important to me, regardless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And lastly, a song you didn't like at first, but came around to.
Well, I'm really into, I love Steely Dan. When I first heard Steely Dan, I was like, what is this? I don't get it. I didn't get it at all. I was like, this is cheesy. Like, I just didn't connect to it at all. And just over the years, something happens. Maybe it's just like I've matured, or I don't know. But now I'm, love Steely Dan.
When you get to my age, then it will be like all of the things you didn't like as a kid, you start like, yeah, right. All the things you dismissed.
Yeah, yeah.
So, slightly depressing, but also quite fun, to be honest.
Quite fun. Yeah, quite like that.
So you're playing Barcelona Monday, October the 21st, Rasmus House 3. Last gig I saw there was Nila Fagania, actually.
Oh, great. Oh, amazing.
It's a really nice venue. Also in Madrid, and I've forgotten where the... La Coruña.
Yeah, which is exciting. Yeah, I've not been to that part of Spain before, so that'd be interesting.
Neither have I, and I've lived here for 13 years.
Oh, wow. Amazing. Galicia?
Yeah. Apparently very, very nice. Very green and lush.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Well, I'm looking forward to the Barcelona gig.
Say hi. Yeah, I'll be hanging around.
I will do. Thank you. Thank you so much for doing this today. And see you in Barcelona in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. All right. Cheers then.
Bye.
See you later. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound. Proudly presented by Cupra.